I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Police Constable Nicholas Angel, born and schooled in London, graduated Canterbury University in 1993 with a double first in politics and sociology, attended Hendon College of Police Training, displayed great aptitude in field exercises, notably urban pacification and riot control. Academically excelled in theoretical coursework and final year examinations, received the Baton of Honour, graduated with distinction into the Metropolitan Police Service.
Well, where is it?
There we go.
Right there, and the thing, and the whatnot.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. This is episode 389. I'm Scott Johnson, joined today by Brian, Morning Sergeant Dunaway.
Morning, Constable. Morning,
hi.
This week on FuzzSack, it's no accident the bad boys of film review chased down a group of hooded figures from the Actors Guild of Great Britain. In fact, it was quite inevitable that we would get around to this satirical parody that features many classical sackable films. Bad Boys 2, Lethal Weapon, Die Hard, and Point Break. We've sacked them all! And now this. So sit back, grab those biscuits you lifted from the local grocer, and prepare yourself for some paperwork that looks a hell of a lot more exciting than it actually is. Also, stealing biscuits is wrong. Yarb.
It's good to hear from the hound, isn't it? Also with us, Randy, you got a mustache, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Hi.
Randy. I'm Randy Deluxe, and I'm not going to say anything funny in this greeting.
Great.
Nope.
Good.
Not one funny thing.
Great.
I'm a serious podcaster with a serious record and a serious job to do. Stop expecting jokes. I'm the straight man, and I'm what makes strange situations funny. You see, if one of you suddenly went and you didn't have me around, that wouldn't be as funny.
Right.
See how that works?
Yeah.
Or do we need another? Want another one?
Yeah, no, that's good.
One more.
Worried that next one might produce more than you're hoping for.
Okay. Insert.
Can you facial shart?
Yeah, you can, turns out. And finally with us, Brian, bad case of mini church chin Ibbot.
Oh,
wow. No kidding, right?
Yeah.
Hey, so what's tough about a movie like this is that the most obvious element to write my film sack opening about are the quick cut segments that Edgar Wright uses in his films. You know, like the scene in the pub where they're ordering round after round of drinks, but you only see split second images of transactions to indicate the passing of time.
Yeah.
The problem is that's a visual thing, and it's really hard to parody in an audio podcast. Until now.
Wow.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the very first supercut of today's film sack.
Okay.
Mining the very depths. Oh, hi. Did I ever tell you boys about the time? The very first supercut of today's film sack.
Nice.
Today's film is Hot Fuzz. Oh, wait, we forgot to play Fletcher's clip.
Oh,
Bill
shoot.
Nighy, the science guy. What are you talking about, Dunaway? Benedict Cumberflap. Hey, what gross got out the most? Edgar Wright Blu-ray edition box set. Hey, that's what's-her-name from that movie. I have clips. You want to hear clips? I don't know what this file is. I'm going to play it anyway. Film Sack Checklist in 288 characters. Like getting church steeple through the chin. Hey, what's our next movie?
It's pretty good. It was just missing some kind of cool music behind it.
Yeah, we were talking about not letting this episode go on too long, and bam, you just like you took it too far, man.
Yeah, you're taking it.
Next episode.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. I think, we've totally abbreviated right there.
Dive right into next week. This has been an interesting choice for us to do Hot Fuzz. That's the movie, by the way, everybody. I don't have Fletcher today because he's not here, but. The Hot Fuzz is this great movie that came out
in 2007.
2007, Simon Pegg, Edgar Wright, directed by Edgar Wright, written by Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright. Nick Frost, of course, in this. And then a bunch of people I forgot were in it, like Martin Freeman and Bill Nighy and all these guys who are not in very long, but they...
Barely, I mean, they're the...
Kind of forgot they were in there.
The sliver of Oreo on the outside.
Yeah, there's a sandwich on this thing. Which is great. Oh, and the other guy, I can't think of his name all of a sudden. The third one that was in the...
Coogan,
Steve Coogan, yeah. Which is great. Always good to see him. But,
It's really well done, too, that whole scene, because it is like a British comedy actor hierarchy.
Yeah, it is.
Well, it's a hierarchy, right? I mean, because it's like, Martin Freeman, he's kind of like the direct supervisor, and then you go up the chain to Coogan.
Yep.
And then it's like, oh crap, we're up to Bill Nighy already. Like, at some point Stephen Fry is going to walk out and say, I own the place.
but
true.
They leave those guys behind in London and they go out into the country to a little town where you have this whole other set of relatively successful, relatively famous people. And they all get a perfectly measured amount of screen time. It's fascinating, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like Jim, Jim Broadbent could really be like one of the top three or four in the film, right?
Oh yeah.
But he's just perfectly metered into it. And so is, Bill Bailey and Timothy Dalton and so on and so on. They're all like, none of them really steal the show. They're just given the right amount.
I agree. It's so this is part of the Simon Pegg. What do they call the trilogy?
The Cornetto trilogy.
Yeah. Or ice cream.
Three flavor Cornetto trilogy.
Right. And for a while it was called the duology because it was just the two. And then now they got this end of the world's end or whatever it is, right? That's the other one.
Right,
isn't that
right.
The one? I've not seen that one. I've seen everything else. I haven't seen that one.
Scott.
I know.
Do we have a preference? I know you can't say Scott out of the three, but I've got to say that I enjoyed the last one, World's End. I find myself going back and watching it more.
Mm.
My initial impact, I absolutely thought Shaun of the Dead was by far the best. But as I've gone back and rewatched them, I find the last one to be more rewatchable for me.
And it's like a trilogy that speaks to film lovers and what they emphasize, right? So like you have people who like the first one because nothing ever lives up to your first experiences, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Shaun of the Dead is a really good, funny film. But then you have people who like the second one because honestly, it's way more like technically
layered.
Complete
yeah.
than the first one. There's layers to it.
Right.
And then you have people who like the third one because they took a long time and they put everything into it. It's like, so this is it. This is the last film we're making at like this. And it's just overwhelming with, all of its elements. And I think it's really cool to ask people which of the Cornetto trilogy do you like the most. I'm shocked Scott hasn't seen World's End.
I know. I'm bugged that I haven't, and it's always been like this little thing in the back of my head. I'm like, why haven't you seen this? And it happened again last night. I'm like, why is that not on your list of things to see? And it just was one of those that I just missed the window on, and I don't know, just never got around to. But
it's a lot slower than this one.
Well, I'll tell you what's hard about Hot Fuzz on FilmSack. I think it's perfectly suitable for FilmSack, but I also can't find anything to not like about it.
Well,
I know it is. That was a hard thing for me. Like my notes are pretty light. Like, oh my God, the music in here is great. And I don't want to talk about all my notes because there are so few. I want to hold on to them to sprinkle throughout the show. But that is the tough thing with comedy movies. And this is kind of a parody. I wouldn't say it's just straight out parody of cop movies.
No,
it is t- to some degree, but this is, but it's still like, all right, you know, you've got your straight laced dude, you've got your small town that he's kind of forced to work in, Doc Hollywood kind of situation, or, mm-hmm. or, you know, dude from the city comes to the country. I think probably the closest comparison for me that I wrote in my notes was Dragnet.
Oh, Dragnet's a good example. Sure. Cause yeah, then the, cause the people turn
down to like the,
they're cultists at the end,
the cultists. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And oh, we think it's this guy and it's this guy. Oh no, I have all this proof that it wasn't me. Oh, and yeah.
Scott, you could be hammering the trope alert sound as Brian's talking.
No, it's true. Like that's the entire, it's almost like it's not worth playing because the entire premise of everything everything that Simon Pegg writes, is based on giant tropes, and then he likes to just play in them. It's like, what's the giant trope? Straight-laced cop goes to a town where everything's goofy. All right, good enough. Now let's make a movie in there, and it ends up being great. You got the Snidely Whiplash character who owns the store, and he's the richest guy in town, and
who?
You don't trust him.
You mean Mr. One Time Bond? What
yeah,
was that?
Mr.
That
One Time right? Bond, Timothy Dalton.
Yeah, One Time Bond.
Yeah, One Time Band, and. You got, you know, the partnering of two very different cops, but in the end, they're perfect for each other. Like, everything is a trope, but it's like the trope is a burned out warehouse, and he goes in there and builds the coolest arcade you've ever seen. You know what I mean? Like, I find this stuff so,
I like that analogy.
So genius, mm-hmm. and so, you know, there's like tiers of British comedy for me, and there's like the Monty Python style, and then there's the more straight,
office style,
yeah, exactly, but kind of cringe-worthy style like that. Or there's these various kinds of things, and every once in a while somebody comes and plants a flag and goes, here is a new flavor and variation on the British comedy take, and Simon Pegg absolutely one of those guys.
And it'd be so easy to do a movie like this that focuses on the two main characters and a couple of the villains and not fleshes out any of the other characters, but all of the shop owner, the little convenience store owner with her one kid, you know, one kid with a backpack at a time. And you know, all the different characters get a really good character development. The other cops each have kind of
I love the cops.
Quirky personality.
Every cop is great. Every single character. Yes. Brian is right. No wasted characters across the board.
Characters are great. Yeah. I only have one complaint about the film, and it's a derivative of the source material, which is the same thing I found in like Bad Boys 2. The movie is exhausting. About halfway through, I'm just so exhausted from, you know, so much shit coming at me that I'm just kind of like, ugh. And I found myself a couple of times, I'm like, oh, I just I need a break here, Simon Pegg.
Yeah.
I need a break.
Yeah.
And just there was no break.
See, and I never felt that way. I felt I was on for the ride, and I love his Edgar Wright's style of filmmaking. I love his weird cuts and stuff. That's another thing I haven't done is I haven't seen Baby Driver yet, which I hear is amazing.
Great movie, no matter who's in it.
And I loved Scott Pilgrim and, you know, yeah, no matter who, yeah. You know what, Brian? Me too. Anyway, go ahead.
The point of the Ritalin editing is to be funny, right? You're supposed to like be trying to keep up with what you're seeing, and that's supposed to make you laugh because you can't do it.
Yeah.
And I've kind of felt like it's one of those things, and there's a lot of other elements in this film that the film starts off using them a lot, mm-hmm. and then it sort of tapers off.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to have the same impact later in the film. Like, mm-hmm. you've already seen that sort of visual joke.
Right.
But the movie finds other ways to make you laugh later in the film. Like, mm-hmm. it changes around. Like, when we finally get to our big action sequence, it just keeps going and going. And you almost start laughing because the action sequence it feels like it's never going to end. Like, this is just, you know, going to be the rest of time. They're going to be...
The battle, I think the battle at the end where they're in the model town or the model village, they didn't meet my expectation, which was I thought they were definitely going to add in some, you know, Godzilla type noises, you know, and some Godzilla type shots, but they didn't. And in some ways I was disappointed, but in other ways I'm like, it makes good sense because you never crossed that line into full on parody. If you did, I would have definitely thought parody.
Right. Yeah. And you would have, and you know, if that had happened, you would have said, oh, okay, I kind of expected that. And the fact that it didn't happen is like, oh, all right. Well, they went just up to that line
yeah.
and didn't cross it just to kind of say, we know it's funny. They're finding a little model town, and the shots looking up at the little buildings with these guys towering over.
Right. It's hard to do like that. You could go full airplane if you want, and there were a couple of moments like when he did the YARP on the phone.
YARP.
And I went, that is right up to the edge of the airplane. Yeah. Or there was one other moment, I can't think of what it was, but that they'll kind of creep up to it, and then they'll back off. So that I'm not taken out of it. I don't feel like any fourth walls are being broken. I feel like it's a living, breathing place, and I like that. I like that they don't go over the line there.
And that's what makes those scenes where there's so much gore and like, you know, really bloody death, like so shocking, because you're lulled into this sense of like, okay, I'm kind of watching a comedy here. And oh my God, the top of that church just went down that guy's neck.
Also, there's visually effective.
Yeah.
Go
ahead, Randy.
It's also, I like how the film establishes farce as normalcy.
Yeah.
Like
farce?
Let's just say you took the David Bradley jokes completely out of the film and said, watch this scene, right? And David Bradley, by the way, is the old actor who played Mr. Filch in Harry Potter, and he played Walder Frey in Game of Thrones.
Come on, like, we all don't know that. Like,
I love it. Well, his name is a little obscure, but I love that guy.
I didn't have any idea who he was.
Really? Oh, wow.
I recognized him as Filch.
Oh, yeah.
Walder Frey, but I didn't know his name, the actor name.
Oh, right.
So there's there's a big protracted joke in this film where he's a country guy who's old and for some reason has both a swan and a shed full of ordnance,
right.
And he can't speak in a way that people really understand,
especially from the city.
And if you took that and extracted it from the film and told someone to watch it, they'd be like, okay, this is all ridiculous.
Yeah.
But for some reason, because the film surrounds it with things like that, you just start to see that. Oh, that's the normalcy of this universe that I'm in now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it works somehow. They get a freaking sea mine. Take it back to the local police station, and you're like, yeah, that's happening. That's
yeah,
all right.
It's great. And that scene, actually, the whole conceit at the end where what's his name jumps in front of, you know, everyone forgot about that guy in his little room and his little surveillance place, and you know, once Nick Frost jumps in front of it and takes the hit, and then they kind of, you know, make you think he's dead and he's not really. They're there for his mom. And you know, that whole thing, I usually hate that sort of thing in movies. I usually just go, oh, okay.
The death fake out.
Yeah, and I really like it here. I can't tell if it's just because I'm a sucker for British things, and there's a tone to what they do that is just, this wouldn't work in a Hollywood-produced American production or something. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but I'm 100% fine with it. And I laugh at it again, and I knew it was coming. I'd seen it.
That's because they never took themselves too seriously in this movie. I mean, even though you took them serious, you knew that it wasn't too serious. So you knew that they had to play through that role. You knew that's what was going on, right? I mean, so there was never in your mind going, oh, maybe he really did die. No, I mean, you knew exactly what they were giving.
Yeah,
you
were okay with it. You didn't feel, feel like I was being manipulated or yanked around or any of that. It just feels like this is a great universe. Like, this is a fun place to be, it's part director, part writing, it's part everything. Like, I really feel like it's one of those movies that's just, it's a comedy.
It's real hard to say.
Yeah, I don't like to define it. It's hard to define what this is, because it's a weird
thing. It's also hard to say, because it's only been roughly 11 years.
Yeah.
So when we watch some of our other almost parody or close to parody movies, they've usually been 20 years. So how will this look in another 10 years? Will we have forgotten everything about Bad Boys 2 that we will actually blame it on this movie? Now, we recently saw it.
Yeah.
So. I think this of the three of them is going to age the best. Mm. It feels like the most timeless and sort of set into its own place.
Right.
Mm.
I actually, like, Shaun of the Dead was amazing at the time, but I feel like it's aging really badly because so many zombie stories are being told since then.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Yeah, and the idea, like Zombieland, I don't even think Zombieland exists without Shaun of the Dead. Like, there's certain sardonic takes on the zombie genre, which Romero's original vision was a sardonic take on society. Mm-hmm. But there's been so many since Shaun of the Dead that it watered it down a little, I think.
And by the way, none of these exist without Spaced. Scott, tell me you've watched
Spaced. Spaced is so good, of course. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, So my Simon, I wet my Simon. No, wait, hold on. I got
please just
wet my Simon whistle.
Yeah, I got my first Simon Pegg on.
Yeah. Oh my god!
Sorry, this
the
is all going.
First time I got Simon pegged.
Yeah,
was...
Peg. I got yeah. The word Peg is in there. Anyway, was Space? It's amazing. It's an incredible series, and people should watch it. And it's great. Yeah. No, he's awesome. I loved him in the recent the Mission Impossible. He's great in that. I love that he's even in that series. I love that he's in Star Trek. I love that he's become so much more than just this guy that makes these weird movies with Edgar Wright. And yet, if there was it was announced tomorrow that they're all getting together for yet another one, I'd be so stoked. Oh my gosh, I'd be so excited. Yeah, Hot Fuzz 2, dude, would be great.
Yeah, prior, I never did get to answer the question about which of the three I liked best.
Oh, yeah.
Prior to watching this one, I would have said Shaun of the Dead, and this one reminded me, like, this is such an underappreciated, well, at least in my opinion. I've only seen it once prior to this rewatching, and I'd forgotten how much I loved it and how well done it is. And I mean, Edgar Wright, the connection is, the first Edgar Wright thing I ever saw was Shaun of the Dead. I didn't see Spaced until afterwards and kind of discovered it based on liking all this.
You got to have that experience where you, the next time you saw Shaun of the Dead, you recognized all the people.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
All his friends.
Exactly.
Yeah. All his friends are still in the
same
group.
I think that's probably how most of us consumed it. I don't think most of us had Spaced on our radar.
Well, it's like me. I'd seen bits and pieces of Firefly, but not the series, not the entire series. I saw the movie in 05 before I went and consumed the whole series. I think that happens sometimes. It's like, oh, this thing is the culmination of something else. Let me go see. And then you go consume it. But I actually saw Spaced before any of this. Mm. And I don't know why. I think it just was on something. It was on some channel. And I was like, what the hell? This is great. Or maybe BBC America or something. Or I don't remember.
BBC America.
Back when I had I like a cable, I think, is where I first saw it. And then I just thought, well, that guy's great. I hope he does something else. I think maybe what I was missing was he was already busy doing other things, and I didn't know it. But, I freaking love that guy. He's great, and I think we're all better for having him in the world. Now, here's the big question. Oh, yeah. Edgar Wright, who's, you know, has so much to do with the tone of these movies, he goes on to do some other stuff. The Scott Pilgrim movie is amazing, and his take everything I've heard, Baby Driver is one of the best movies ever made. So all of that being the case, he was also on the original Ant-Man deal. It was going to be his script and his directing, and then there was a falling out with Disney and he bailed. And every time I see an Edgar Wright movie, I think, man, I would really like to see his take on a superhero, something like that.
Especially Ant-Man, because those movies kind of need to distinguish themselves from the rest of them.
Right.
Right.
And they have. I mean, like, they've done okay at doing that, but you have to think his would have had a punch to it that maybe it doesn't have. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It doesn't make the ones that got made bad at all. They're great.
Right.
I think they're right to be what they are. It's just, I want to see what he would have done, you know?
Right. Did you guys ever see Fantastic Fear of Everything?
No, is that one of his?
It's a Simon Pegg film, and it's great. He's you know, he's basically afraid of everything, and I really loved this Simon Pegg where he's kind of just freaking out. He's got so many fears, and I really enjoyed this. One of my favorite Simon Pegg movies. But there's a new one. There's a new one coming out by the same writer, Crispin Mills, just recently announced. It's the Slaughterhouse Rules. Have you guys seen this new Simon Pegg? Mm-mm. Thing coming out?
No.
2018? Yes. Action comedy horror, right my alley.
That sounds great. He's not doing is he?
This trailer just came out a couple days ago.
Yeah.
It's at a boarding school where all sorts of horror things are happening.
Yeah, it's like it's a play on Cider House Rules, right? So the Cider House Rules movie, but a parody of it or whatever.
Yeah. It always freaks me out when I go to IMDb the week we're watching a film and I haven't even searched the film yet. And the movie that pops up and is advertising me is Simon Pegg. I'm like, are y'all listening to me? Mm-hmm. Are y'all monitoring?
One of the reasons we're watching this is that it's streaming on Netflix, and that just feels like, that's telling us we need to watch it. But then, I go and look up what is Edgar Wright doing, and there's an interview with Simon Pegg from about 5 weeks ago, where he's talking about he and Edgar Wright are definitely going to make another movie together in the future.
That'd be
and
great.
And I'm like, what is the, is it? I always felt like it was a film sack thing. Like we somehow put this energy out into the universe and we cause things to happen. No, maybe it's actually a Netflix thing.
Yeah. Marketing. And,
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And we're just the consumers of this weird energy.
No, it's like when, this is unrelated, but for months ago, I got so obsessed with the song Toto, I couldn't stop listening to it.
Song Africa.
Yeah, or Africa, sorry. The song
I was
Toto.
About to say, a song Toto? I was to say, that's kind of weird, because you always play in the Africa. So. Yeah,
so I was playing, cool. I just couldn't get enough of it.
Down the Toto.
Everybody was like, Scott, what's wrong with you? Too much Toto, too much Africa, and I couldn't stop. And I swear to you now, and I'm not saying it's because of me by any stretch, I just think I was in tune with the zeitgeist because everybody's doing Toto covers of Africa. Yep. They're all doing cover, or, you know, playing it constantly. It's a big joke. Weird Al came out on stage with Weezer the other day and played Africa. Like, now it's everywhere. So sometimes that happens, and I feel like I'm film tech. We get so, I think we are on the kind of tip, and this is new movies too. I think we're on the tip of just paying attention. And so it feels like stuff's molding to our will a little bit. Right. It's weird. I agree with that. It's very strange. Anyway, he's working on something right now, a documentary called the Untitled Sparks Documentary. I don't know what that is.
Oh, my God. If that is a documentary about the band Sparks.
It must be. Let me look here. Director Edgar Wright. Is Ron Mayall and Russell Mayall?
Yes. Okay, yeah, those are the two brothers in the band Sparks. Yeah. Holy crap.
That'd
really
be cool. That's cool. Then something announced called Shadows, which doesn't have any description or cast yet. But anyway, I just love him. I love his style and the way stuff looks, and he's freaking great, and he should just never not make movies. So that's what I want to say about that guy.
I think it's fascinating that he's making a documentary about Sparks. I'm turned upside down by that. What is that going to even be?
I don't know who they are. Give me a background on the band. What's the big deal?
Probably the only hit song you know by Sparks is Cool Places, a song that they did with Jane Wedlin from the Go-Go's.
Okay you're going to sing it for me, right?
No, I'm not going to sing it. But it's a couple of brothers who the mid-70s started this band called Half Nelson. It didn't seem to do well. They changed the name to Sparks, and then all of a sudden they're more appreciated.
It's hard to believe Half Nelson wasn't a popular band name.
I know, right?
It feels like it should be.
Brian, I just want to say, I think they had bigger songs than Cool Places.
Oh,
maybe. Like what?
This Town Ain't Big Enough for Both of Us.
Big in the UK, but the only one that really actually broke into the Billboard charts here in America was Cool Places.
Here in America.
What about the number one song in heaven?
It was a number one song in heaven, but not here in the U.S. No, it's a good point. There, you know, some people know these obscure tracks. That whole album, Number One in Heaven, was Giorgio Moroder produced, and he got all that attention recently because of Daft Punk, and well deserved. Sparks got added onto not added to the bill, but they joined forces with Franz Ferdinand, and the two bands released an album that was not like a featuring, it was like the two of them working together
again.
But they were working as a, like, everybody got equal billing in that band. They've been one of my favorite bands for a long time. So to hear that Edgar Wright's involved with a documentary about these guys is
that's exciting. That guy's got a bad really mustache exciting. Though. That's a horrible mustache.
It was kind of a Hitler mustache, and then in the 90s he changed it to be a very thin John Waters mustache.
Well, the one in the 70s and the 80s looks like two Hitler mustaches hanging out.
It does. It,
Charlie Chaplin had it too.
Yeah, but he had it before it became not so popular.
Yeah, not so popular.
Mustache hipsters. I love it.
The main thing that strikes me as weird about Sparks is that they're still working, and you never, ever hear about them. Like, they've been doing things. They've been making songs and performing live, like, in this current decade, and you never hear about them, ever, ever. Like, you just brought up Toto, which a lot of people associate with the early 80s. At, like, Toto just played here in Irvine last week, and like they were at the OC Fair. It was a big show. Like, you hear about them. You never hear about Spark.
They were just so weird. They could never get a foothold in mainstream music. Their music is very, very unusual. They have a song about, you know, a couple of kids who are stealing food from under the table of a fancy dining party. They have a song about...
Wait, didn't Jane's Addiction do that?
I've been caught stealing. They have a song about a guy who intentionally runs his car into attractive women's cars so that he can have an opening line with them. So that
Wasn't that Phil Collins?
Didn't Phil Collins do that?
Wasn't that...
Anyway, but they've always just been too fringe, weird to be mainstream. And
that makes me want this documentary.
Oh, my gosh. If this gets attention for a band like this, that is we did a whole Soundography episode on them, obviously, because I said we have to do a Sparks episode. And just diving into their whole. Yeah, the photos you're putting into our chat.
They're amazing.
Yes,
they're amazing. They are, everything about this, I want more of, you, of whatever's going on here.
They are, here's a little fact, and then we can probably talk about Edgar Wright again, or the movie we're talking about. But Paul McCartney is such a fan of Ron Mayall. Ron Mayall's the guy with the Charlie Chaplin, Hitler, John Waters mustache.
Yeah.
That in his video for Coming Up, it's like a... not CGI, but like a whole bunch of Paul McCartney's playing different era Paul McCartney's.
Oh, cool.
Like a hippie era Beatles Paul McCartney and a Nehru jacket, early 60s Paul McCartney. One of the only characters he plays in that video that's not Paul McCartney is Ron Mayall as a keyboardist. So you get Paul McCartney playing that guy with that mustache.
Oh, I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Sparks,
super
documentary.
Super influential, but not super mainstream.
Well, and influential, you mean Sparks, right?
Sparks, other musicians.
Influential on, like, other synth pop, right? Like, their sound is really peculiar, and...
Yeah, but every couple albums, they would reinvent their sound. Like, the number one in Heaven stuff was, like, a two or three album stint. Prior to that, it was a four album, chamber pop kind of thing with a lot of strings and horns and violins and stuff like that.
Chamber pop. I don't know anything about anything you're talking about, but I do know what a chamber pot is. And I like the fact that they've combined that term. That is such a UK thing, right? I love it.
Yeah. Oh. But anyway, so they reinvent themselves every few albums. So synth pop here, straight up rock and roll for like the Angst in My Pants and Womp That Sucker albums and
Angst in My Pants. Okay,
they do tend to latch on to puns, and then certainly in later albums they'll find a pun they really like, and then they'll make that the repeated line throughout 90% of the song, and it's kind of where they've kind of lost me a little bit. But prior to like 1995, I've everything Sparks did, I ate up. At some point, we're going to watch a movie called Roller Coaster. I think it's just called Roller Coaster, and it's about it's basically Die Hard and amusement park kind of thing.
Oh, yes. That's what you're talking about.
Sparks is the band that plays in the, for some reason, is playing in the amusement park, and they keep showing.
They show a couple full songs.
Yeah. They don't.
Go! Boost your blood.
By the way, so back to this movie for a second. I just realized this.
Yes.
So
we could stay back to the movie.
Well, yeah, no, that's fine.
Why we're here.
The trivia in there is broken because somebody wrote this. This film completes what Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright refer to as the Blood and Ice Cream trilogy, which was
an early name for it. Yeah.
Yeah, but then it says
two completes one and two.
Well, hold on. This is even worse. It says here the other two are Shaun of the Dead in 2004 and Hot Fuzz 2007. Yeah. This is where I got it. Was Hot Fuzz? They only mentioned two movies.
Copy and pasted from.
Are you getting that IMDb or Wikipedia?
Well, IMD freaking B.
I'll tell you, man, our source materials like Wikipedia and IMDb, I don't know if we're becoming more versed and we're seeing the errors or if the errors are just increasing, but I have noticed that in the movies that we've watched recently.
I have as well.
Make sure that you don't find that interesting. Make sure you don't click to find that interesting.
You know, I don't.
Is there a way to say, I found it uninteresting?
Yeah, this is very uninteresting, I want to be able to say to it. Nobody. I'm looking at this one on the page
Chris
and nobody's...
Pine and, Robert Downey Jr. were both considered for the lead in Hot Fuzz.
That shouldn't say. They shouldn't say, do you find this interesting? The options should be, is this fake? And you know what I mean? Like, can we have a crowd?
There should
fun
just be a button that says "I call bullshit."
Yeah,
just a little button that says.
Yeah,
with a link of Matthew McConaughey. Wasn't that his deal?
Look, they got Jeff Bezos money. They can afford a new link. Get in there and fix that, you bastards. Anyway, how many? Okay, trivia time. How many? Sure. How many confirmed Game of Thrones actors in this film?
One.
Are there some unconfirmed ones?
No, no,
only one confirmed in my head.
There's only
two.
Two. Okay.
Yeah, I caught three.
Oh,
right?
So all right. Who'd you
the found?
Hound. Yeah, the Hound. Yeah. So Yarp.
And then,
which I did not realize until afterwards. Holy cow!
Right. Yeah. I didn't either.
Oh, really?
He's not nearly as houndish in this one.
It's right. When he said Yarp, and that I went, oh, okay.
It's like the guy goes from having no hair to all the hair.
And then Jim Broadbent is an Archmaester in the most recent season.
This is correct.
When they go back to
he's great King's in Landing, that role. Right? So good in that role. Yeah.
And
then who's your third?
Hold on. I just named three. I feel like I saw a fourth.
Oh, who was your third? Who'd you say? You said
okay again. Walder Frey.
Oh, I missed you saying him. Yeah, that's him. Yeah.
And hold on.
And then the maester. And then you think
give
there's
me some
a
hours to think about it.
That's all I have.
That woman is also the little convenience shop owner in Winterfell, isn't she? No, you know. Only one White Walker in there at a time.
No, she's an NPC in Silvermoon. Come on now.
What is it about old English actors just looking as haggard and beat up as all the world
that so good
we find interesting?
Because there's character in those lines, man. There's something about it. It's like I'll tell you what it's like when I had my life drawing class in college. We would get, I may have mentioned this before, but we get lots of young, you know, naked 19-year-old, 20-year-old girls who were just trying to pay for school and would come in there and pose. And as cool as that may sound as I'm saying it, that would get boring. What would get interesting is when some 90-year-old man would come in and he would pose. And
draw this flesh flap?
And this angle.
It makes no sense.
But like the angles and the way the bones have moved around for that guy and the way his face was cut was so much more interesting to draw and paint. Like, I think that's what it is. I think there's something about, you know, these old, especially British guys, that just make them so.
That's because they don't try to fight it. That's one thing I gotta say about the United Kingdom and people, not in America. They embrace their age with grace, whether people appreciate the way it looks or not. They embrace it.
Yeah, people like Judi Dench she is growing old very gracefully, and she's fantastic to look at. You look at her and go, so much character in this old, older woman's face. Yeah,
they're not trying to fight it; they own it. They go, "Okay, I'm heading. I'm steering into this."
I agree on an overall. I mean, everyone should be able to do whatever the hell they want to do, but as an overarching thing, I would take 10 Judi Dench's over one Joan Rivers any day. Not that they're in the same business, but you know what
I'll
I mean.
I'll take 10 Dench's, please.
If I was going to see stand-up comedy, I'd rather have Joan Rivers.
I don't know. I'd take
okay, we get it.
Who's the guy in Australia that's funny? I like him. Jim Jefferies.
The one guy. Who's that one guy in Australia that's funny? Who is it?
Jim Jefferies. That guy cracks me up. He makes me laugh. Yeah. He's dirty, though. Careful. No, not for the kids. Dirty, dirty, dirty boy. Anyway.
So you're going to tell me Lucy Punch was not in Game of Thrones. She's
I don't know, the
actress that plays Juliet, the with the annoying laugh in this movie.
Oh yeah,
she would be great in Game. Actually, all of them would be good in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, you could have I mean, even Simon Pegg would make a pretty good. These days, he's a little more lined and cut in his face and stuff. He'd make a pretty good like hooded, sneaky guy at the Citadel
something. I'll bet all of the older bit actors in this film were in Game of Thrones, like. You know what I mean? Like the neighborhood watch, basically, all of those older actors.
The guy with a shotgun.
Are there more people in Game of Thrones or Harry Potter films?
Oh, man. That's a good point. That's a good point.
Well, there's a lot of crossover there as well, right?
Wait.
Like, yeah.
Wait.
I mean, I love that stuff. Oh, my gosh. I'd love
old actors
from Britain.
Can I ask a question? When the crap was Kate Blanchett on screen?
Yeah, she's his girlfriend early on.
What?
Oh, wearing the mask.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's in her.
Really?
That was Kate Blanchett.
She's in a crime scene.
That's right. Yes.
That was
yes,
Kate Blanchett, who's now dating Dave or Mike or whatever. Oh my gosh. I had no idea until you guys just said that.
And I didn't see Peter Jackson playing as the thief dressed as Santa. I missed that as well.
No, the one that cut his hand.
Flip book.
Early
in the movie.
Isn't it the one that stabbed his hand through?
Amazing things that he's done.
Yeah.
That's right. Yes. It's like the Rushmore lead-in of Angel's character.
Well, when he puts he puts the knife through his hand and everyone asks him about his hand, that Santa is, Peter Jackson?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And can I have one trope alert only for this whole episode?
Of course.
I love that the best police person in the city goes into a crime scene that's completely filled with people and notices something that none of them saw.
Yeah, it was great.
And they all just kind of like smack their own foreheads. I love that. That trope is so ridiculously funny.
Yeah,
and
they pull it off so well. And again, it's one of those that creeps up next to Airplane but doesn't cross the line. It's great.
Almost Ace Ventura.
Yeah.
Kind of that thing.
Yeah. But he doesn't do it. Oh, it's so good, you guys. This is one of those harder movies for me because my notes are super short. Like,
super sparse. I gave up because there was no way I could keep up with the amount of dialogue that was coming. And because really the ideas were fairly simple. I mean, there is this real research that went into this movie with Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg studying how real police work is versus, what we see in American police dramas, and they really played up the idea that really the paperwork is where all the power is,
right?
In doing this stuff, and so they made it instead of him wielding a gun constantly, they had all these fast supercut shots of writing down information. This the real power.
There's actually like a subversive moral message in here, right? Where he's like basically saying over and over that this is how policing should be, like reminding people to use the right terminology to protect themselves and others and so on.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool. It's just kind of, stitched throughout the film.
And again, it's hard to do. I don't think that's an easy thing to do. And they pull it off and it feels right and it doesn't feel forced and it doesn't feel, preachy. Like, I think this is hard. What they make is hard and it looks easy. And it's so loose and fun to watch. I just love it.
Then here's the tough one. What's your what part of the movie did you find was flat? Like, what one thing were you like, oh, that's kind of
I didn't have one. I never had one. I don't know if that's because scenes that would normally be flat are sandwiched with Edgar Wright crazy cuts, and maybe that made them feel less flat. But I didn't have that time or that moment. I felt like everything was really strong.
The thing that felt flat, because there were so many great characters for me in this movie, the thing that felt flat was the Simon Pegg character, Angel, never actually, I didn't feel like, grew vertically. So what he did, he never really stepped out of being able to switch things off, because that was one of his character flaws. It's like, oh, he's got a character flaw, he can't switch it off. That's the reason why his relationships all fail, because he can't switch it off.
And
we never really get a definitive moment where he switches it off.
I feel like we do
a little bit with the whole, like, up yours.
The film definitely doesn't, it's a love letter to cop movies, right?
Yeah,
he definitely doesn't do the thing that so many of them do at the end, where he gets to be changed by it all.
Right.
Instead, there are other movies that it's referencing where he is the same exact cop he was when he started.
Sure, he digs in. It's given me a minute to think about something that maybe fell flat for me. And for me, the only thing I can think of, honestly, because all that other stuff didn't bother me at all, is that he had this problem with guns, and it was never very well explained.
Mm-hmm. Right. That was just a reference to a trope. Right.
Right.
It's just like, hey, you guys know this trope? And then he goes to the carnival and uses a pellet gun and the thing he most avoids
is actually the thing he's the best
at.
And he found a way to be the best by following procedure and not being quick
Right.
So, I mean, there's definitely some social commentary there, but yeah, I would have liked to have seen some more of.
I mean, there
that
was in the
instead of one more supercut of the bar.
Well, in the supercut of the beginning, that was like had Martin Freeman. The thing I played at the top of the show, where he's narrating who he is. There's a scene where he busts into a room and there's a guy in there with a gun, and Simon Pegg shoots him. And so, as that started to develop in the story, I thought maybe he's upset because he shot and killed somebody. Like
they cut 30 minutes from the movie, which is good because it's already close to 2 hours.
Yeah, it's a long one.
So, I'm assuming they probably expanded upon probably most of that stuff that were missing, because we loved it so much. We would have gladly given up 2.5 hours of more of this, you know.
Oh, I totally would have. You know what? It's my only regret is I end up seeing this on DVD later and not in theaters or Blu-ray or something at the time. And that's the only real bummer complaint I have is I would have loved to have seen this in a theater with like surround sound and all that.
I want to answer my own question. I felt like the whole Dire Straits Romeo and Juliet sequence that just. I don't know. I just like I kind of check out during that whole part.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not laughing that much at the weird stage show. And
I was laughing at Simon Pegg's facial reactions. That was the only thing I was laughing at.
Come on, you weren't laughing when they busted into doing the Cardigans song at the end of the.
I wasn't really.
I really
wasn't.
I
that was the part that was the dip in the film for me.
Okay,
Brian Ibbett, you have any sort of dip? It's unusual for us, by the way, on the show to look for dips in movies because they're all dippy. But this is just a hard one. It's hard.
It is a really hard one for me. I mean, there really wasn't. There wasn't a point at which I was like, "All right, let's get past this." Kind of checked out. Moving forward kind of thing.
Yeah, you're not skipping anything really, right?
No, I think that might have been, there might have been something like that when I saw it first time, because I didn't see any of the three movies in the theater. They've all been on home video.
Yeah.
It's way up for it.
And so there might have been, you know, might have been like, oh, this isn't like Shaun of the Dead. I'm going to play Candy Crush on my iPad or something, whatever I was playing at the time. I certainly wasn't playing Candy Crush.
How dare you?
I know. Well, all right. Definitely, if there's any consolation, it definitely wasn't Candy Crush.
No.
Right. I've never been a Candy Crush guy, but it was probably like
the DS
Alliance or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that might have been a checkout point the first time
I'm glad I was at home watching it, because I'll be honest with you, movies that most Simon Pegg movies in my area, in a mixed environment of viewers, is going to be not well received by most. I personally find it enjoyable, and most of the people that hang out with would find Simon Pegg movies enjoyable. But usually when I go to the theater, it's usually people who are kind of like just checked out.
Meat
they got
potatoes.
Their phones out. Yeah. They're going in and out of the theater, and they're just, you know, it's like, oh, they're complaining and talking. And it's like, shut up.
Yeah,
you're not appreciating mm-hmm. what this is.
Yeah,
and so I prefer this at home.
Yeah, I'm for everything at home these days. Anyway, I'm like right. just have it all go there first. Everything sounds great now
something
great.
Like Avengers, where everybody is pretty much locked in. I'll go to the theater to see that because I feel like we're all enjoying it.
Yeah.
At equal level.
Yeah, of course. Well, you know, I want to see Infinity War 2 in a theater. That would be dumb to say anything else, but. Just about everything else I'm fine with at home. Doesn't really bother me anymore. Here's an interesting little bit. The sword. You remember the sword Simon Pegg's character uses in the final scene?
Yep. Yes.
It's a replica of Gandalf's sword, Glamorgan, from the Lord of the Rings film trilogy. It was probably brought by Peter Jackson since he was on set. I didn't know he was there.
I brought.
Yeah. I brought you this nice thing. No, he's
not. That's not a knife. Let me show you now.
It's not Australian.
It's close, but not quite close.
Band meeting, he says, and then hands him a sword.
I mean, maybe, but it's also like it's a sword you could buy online, and there's bunches of them hanging around Blizzard.
Shut your mouth!
But don't you think it'd be cool if like Peter Jackson says, "Hold on a minute, I've got one in me car."
In my car, right?
It's in my trunk. Hold on.
In my trunk. I don't know, he's not British. I don't know why I'm doing that voice.
Oh my gosh, I don't know. The accent you were doing wasn't really British, so I'm okay with it. I accept it.
Now, in the very beginning, before the supercut, and as he's walking down the hall, and all it is his footsteps getting louder and louder
that
as he gets
good.
Close. Yeah. When that happens, I had the speakers on. I didn't have my headphones on, and the whole time there's siren sounds, like police sirens. Mm-hmm. I hear this as soon as it starts ramping up upstairs. I hear.
Doggies.
My dog Raider started howling. That's hilarious. Howling at the top of her dog lungs.
Yeah.
So I had to put my headphones on, and she was fine after that. But yeah, it was great. Also, as far as anything gross, nothing grossed me out. I did think that it was very effective to have Timothy Dalton's neck the way it was, and I thought it was very believable looking, but nothing grosses me out.
When he impaled him?
Yeah. But nothing grosses me out because it's all so crafted to be ridiculous that it just, nothing's gross. And nobody kissed weird or did anything.
I'm sure you were a little tiny bit bothered by the thing in the tavern, the pub where the guy's just peeing openly.
Oh yeah, I didn't like that.
Going all over the seat.
Yeah, yes. I didn't like that. Yeah. I didn't like that. You're right. Okay, that's gross. I'm with you there. But then again, I don't know. It's like, maybe it's the British stuff. Just none of
it is the British stuff.
Yeah, it all comes off as different. It's hard to explain.
I don't eat biscuits all the time. And I'm not talking about American biscuits. I'm talking about English biscuit cookies.
Yeah.
I don't eat those all the time, but when I do, I get a craving occasionally. And watching that, man, I was like, oh, it's time to head to Publix and get me some biscuits tomorrow.
Yeah, big tin of them, like one of those big round metal things. Yeah. Mm.
Oh, I tell you who's got a lot of them. World's Market. You ever been to World's Market?
Yeah, World's Market has all that stuff.
Cool. So
Market.
Many biscuits.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Love it in there. I like that place because they have weird hot sauces, and I love getting those. Mm-hmm. Bring those
and
home.
Those Tarani syrups, man, like a wall of Tarani syrups. And those are the best thing to get. Like if you you make some iced tea, just get a little bit of that sugar-free peach Tarani syrup and instantly you're at the Olive Garden.
Yep. And there's all, and you're there and then your family. And then
how would I get at the Olive Garden?
There's all
right up here.
They're always they always have weird pickled shit there. I love it. Oh. It's like weird. It's like, oh, you want some pickled horse fingers or whatever it is? And you're like, yeah, I do.
Pickled shit.
Yeah.
Pickled horse fingers.
So,
I don't think horses have pink fingers. Sorry. It's a bad example.
I wanted to draw your attention to the trivia for one last thing. Because this trivia, it, over and over and over, it says, the movie is just like this other movie. The movie is just like this other movie. And it gets really, really boring. The very last piece of trivia. I'm just going to read it to you. Okay. The film has a similar plot to Outland. In that film, Sean Connery stars as a policeman who is transferred to a mining colony on Io, which he soon investigates the deaths of miners who are dying from an addictive narcotic. As he investigates deeper, he's targeted by hitmen and discovers the administrator of the colony hired the hitmen to kill him, and that they're behind a drug ring, blah, 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 blah. And then for some reason,
saw it on FilmSec.
Yeah,
and for some reason, it goes on to say Sean Connery was the first James Bond. Timothy Dalton made two movies in the 80s, and I'm just like, name FilmSec episode 30. Wait, come
Matt
on,
Bright, that connective tissue is loose.
Yeah, some loose tissue, kind of like old British actors. Very loose tissue.
I think we have seen just about every movie that was referenced as influence.
Yeah.
For this movie.
No, that just rack of DVDs that he stared at and zoomed in on.
Yeah.
I was looking. It wasn't just the two. It was like dozens of those we've seen. Like,
well,
it's
and
great.
The trivia says that one of them is Zombie Party, which was one of the early titles or one of the titles of Shaun of the Dead in other countries.
Oh. Really? So if I went to like Zimbabwe and wanted to see a movie, I'd go see Zombie Party. That's awesome.
But then there are other films that this one references heavily that we haven't seen for sure. Like we haven't watched Chinatown. We haven't watched Mad Max, the first one.
No.
I mean, individually we have though, right?
Oh yeah, no, sure. Dude, I've seen those Mad Max movies till my face is blue. But also the
Super Cop, which was referenced off.
Yeah, Super Cop's over there.
Oh, yeah, Super Cop. Yeah,
we did do that. I mean, the fact that it was focus so much on Bad Boys 2 and the Keanu Reeves one, Point Break was so, I mean, that was just so FilmSack. It's just, I felt like it was for us, you know. It's like, hey, check out these two movies you guys definitely watched and had a good time with.
I was a little resistant to this movie because I did know that it was kind of parody, and I always have tough time with that. But the fact that it seems to come at a time that we've already covered most of these other films that is parodying, I thought it kind of fit in well.
I did like technically from the trivia, and I agree with you 100%. Part of it may be this process. So it says this: the film progresses through three increasingly larger negative formats. The opening flashback footage is standard 16mm. From then up until the robots.
Robots.
What robots?
I don't remember robots.
Anyway,
are you reading the right trivia?
It says right here, it's 3 perf Super 35, and then from there it's 4 perf Panavision anamorphic until the ending scenes, which switches back to Super 35. Anyway, the reason you do that isn't because they were like, oh, we don't have enough of this stock. Let's just go use some other 16 millimeter stock. It's not like that. The idea was to certain film gives certain scenes a more muted tone. So like when you're in London still, everything's a little sterile and slow and whatever, and he's in that office and everything, and that's, you know, no big deal. You jump to 35 when you're having your action scenes, and now you've got, you know, crazy depth of field and a much broader sort of...
Could that be another one that's copied from End of the World or World's End? Because,
oh, it might be.
Robots in World's End.
are there robots in World's End? Okay, I have no idea.
I've talked about this before, and... there's a difference in when I watch a movie that was made by someone who loves film and then a group of people who were just making film because they're into filmmaking. Yeah. And I feel like these are the lovers of film from the top down to the bottom. It's not just about the acting. It's not just about...
You guys have been working together since college or before, you know, and it, clearly they just are, just want to make shit.
One of the pieces of trivia that we know is correct is because it's everywhere, is that they did all of their photography in 11 weeks, which is kind of cool.
Yeah,
knowing exactly how long it takes to make a film like this, but come on, you know that Edgar Wright spent 10,000 hours prepping for this film before.
Yeah, the prep was amazing from the stuff they did it for a couple of years, I believe.
Yeah,
prepping stuff. So.
I want to, and every time I see a movie like this, anything that's set in the British countryside, Northern England. Mm-hmm. I want to move there, dude. I want quirky, strange accented people walking around in sweaters going, oh, you see what happened to the thing? And then these ones that speak in almost like a broken dialect that's ancient. Right. Oh, I love it.
It's hard not to think about in Bruges when you see this.
Yes.
That's really good. You know, I meant to go back and check the facts, but I was curious. This time around, watching it with a more critical eye, I noticed that when Simon Pegg and Frost were in their police car and Simon Pegg was trying to point out the guilty people and, you know, they kept dismissing it as not guilty people. I want to say every one of those people that he pointed out were actually bad people.
Yeah. Well, almost everybody in the town turned out to be kind of, well, not everybody, but
except for the cops, right? Well, yeah.
Yeah. The cops are just misled. Because Broadbent was such a dick. But I love that guy. I loved everybody. It's all good, guys. This is a good movie. Everybody should see it. I'm going to play clips now, but the recommendation is Hot Fuzz is great, and you should watch it while it's on Netflix because it's great. And I would even recommend it. Like, it's rated R, but I think like 12 and up.
It's really just the gore.
Gore that's so over the top that it's... you can't even take it seriously. Like, I mean, you can, but it's well done. Like the severed heads on the street. It looks like severed heads on the street. It's just, look at it and go, well, that's a funny juxtaposition to this town that never has crime. Like,
well, when they killed the messenger, I thought that was pretty disturbing. That was a pretty disturbing image.
That was the only death that was like, oh.
Right. And he walks around for a few minutes. It's like, I don't know if I want to watch this part.
Wait, the guy that had the thing drop on him from the church?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He was the messenger.
that was rough.
They killed the messenger.
Right. He, writer for the local paper.
Yeah. Yep. That was pretty good.
I find it incredibly rewatchable, but I wasn't paying attention to our upcoming list, and I watched it about a month ago.
Mm.
And then I watched... and then I watched it again 2 days ago, and I found it, like, incredibly rewatchable. Like, it held my attention, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and that's rare, especially for stuff like us where we're looking at it for, you know, we're taking notes, and in my case, I'm capturing clips and doing screen grabs and, you know, doing all this stuff, and it's paused for a second while I do that, and, like, usually that's kind of a sterile lab approach to watching movies, but this just held me the whole time.
And I think this is a movie that... you know, you hear me talk about Saturday afternoon movies. This is actually one of the good ones, but I don't feel like I have to watch it linear. I mean, I feel like I can turn this on and I can go about my day and then come in and catch a moment and enjoy it.
Absolutely. I think you need one, at least one good watching where you've seen it top to bottom. But yes, I think repeat viewings are definitely that. It's, you can have this on in the background and have fun with it. All right, I'm going to play some clips. These are varied. Here's one where he's chatting with the boss.
I like that description.
Varied.
This is him and Martin Freeman talking while they're in London. Here you go.
Hello, Nicholas.
Hello, Sergeant.
How's the hand?
Still a bit stiff.
It can get awfully hairy out there.
I'm surprised you weren't snapped up sooner for a nice desk job. That's what I did. I prefer to think my office is out on the street.
Indeed you do.
Indeed you do.
I love that. They're playing it so flat. It's just amazing.
Yeah. I love Martin Freeman. In 07, we didn't really know how far. I mean, he'd been on The Office as Tim and stuff. And it was, you know, we knew he may have. Let's see. When did the Hitchhiker's Guide movie come out? I don't remember. Where he was Arthur
was
Dent.
2002, maybe?
Something like that.
Something. It was after, I know it was after Douglas Adams died, but I don't know when. But anyway, I don't think anybody knew where he was headed. And
2005.
Five, yeah. Okay. So,
you five felt right.
So 2 years before that. Oh, weird. Before this, I
know. Yeah.
Well, I've got my timeline all wrong there, because that would have said the other way.
He did that between The Office ended in 2003, then he appeared in Shaun of the Dead. Oh, he also appeared in Love Actually.
Oh, and right. Then, he was the he was the nerd. He was the kind of nerdy normal guy that was in the porn. Yeah.
And then Hitchhikers. And then, 2 years after that, Hot Fuzz.
Oh, I got to watch Love Actually again. I love that movie so much.
Wait till Christmas.
All right. Fair enough.
feels weird in August to watch Love Actually.
A lot of Harry Potter actors in that movie, too.
Yeah.
Here's a sound he made.
New.
Instead of no, he says new.
New.
And it made me laugh. Let's see.
I kind of like it here.
Oh, I just like. Oh, you know what? That's the thing I would say about Simon Pegg. He's like this little toe-headed. You can almost see him like what he looked like when he was a kid. Just like a little weirdo-looking kid. Freckly, blonde, balding little dude. But he's got the greatest voice, man. Such a cool voice.
I kind of like it here.
It's just got a great resonance.
And he has grown as an actor so much. Yeah. Like when you go back and look at your favorite episode of Spaced, you'll see he's just doing this one thing.
Yeah.
And he's not really got much range, but he found range. He found a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great. I would put him in my movie if I was making a movie. I wrote here that I love him. Boy, I don't know what this is.
Nicholas, we're offering you a smashing position with a delightful cottage and a lovely little place that I think has won Village of the Year. I don't know how many times. It'll be good for you.
Oh, it's Steve Coogan. I freaking love him. Mm-hmm. Don't know what it is about Steve Coogan, but could watch him read the paper. I think he's great.
You saw that the movie, not Matilda, but it was a woman's name.
The one with Judi Dench in it.
Yes, the one with Judi Dench.
I loved that movie.
That was so good, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, that was good. That was so good. What was that called? Not Matilda. You're right, though. It's like that. It's like
It's like something named
Philomena. Yeah.
Ah, yes, Philomena.
Great movie. Oh my
really
gosh,
good movie.
Yeah, I loved that. And also his one where he travels around eating with his friend. It's improv. I can't think of what those movies are called.
So those trips movies or shows or whatever you want to call them. The first one is pretty good.
Yeah,
but then they start coasting on the first one.
Well, they get a little dark because they start making really bad life choices, and it makes me sad in the movies.
Yeah.
I love the first one.
It's just like, watch their first, The Trip, because it's fun, and it's, you know, it also has some sad bits, but it's like mostly, it's just mostly comedians, you know, two comedians ad-libbing on each other, and, you know, they've picked out all the best stuff. After that, I don't recommend it.
I kind of agree. I think it peters out, but it's good stuff in the beginning. Here's Bill Nye.
What does Peter's out mean anyway?
Peter out.
That's something you get arrested for.
No. Right. Peter's out. No, it's if something runs out, it's like that.
Oh, I know what it's supposed to mean, but
I don't know. I always said it growing up. I wonder if it's regional. Yeah. I don't know if you heard that much growing up or not. Let's see. Peter's.
Where it comes from. Yeah, no. I mean, obviously it means to just kind of fade off, trail off.
Right,
but,
right.
To diminish gradually and stop, dwindle to nothing. The hot water always peters out.
Oh, man, now I'm thinking it's because after your business, it just kind of fades away. Is that?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Kind of, yeah. Is it
I don't think so. I don't think so, but I like that. I like that.
Right. I don't like it. Yeah. I don't like that at all.
You lose intensity or dwindle in strength, just like when you peter
I'd
out.
I'd love to go again, love, but I'll peter out.
I'm all petered out. That's Australian. Here's Bill Nye talking.
If we let you carry on running around town, you'll continue to be exceptional, and we can't have that. You'll put us all out of a job. With respect, sir, you can't just make people disappear. Yes, I can. I'm the chief inspector.
I love him so
much.
Ah,
foreshadowing. Chief inspector in small town. Does make people disappear.
Is he okay now? You don't see him do anything now. Is he okay? Has anyone checked in on him? On Bill Nye?
Oh, he's fine.
Is he?
He's making things.
He's 1,000 years old. Let's see, actor.
Okay, wait, before you look it up, I want guesses. How old is Bill Nye?
Well, he was by
1,000 years old. Scott just said it.
I know he was born in 49 is all I know. So what is that?
All right.
That's
so he's 70.
69, 70. Yeah.
Okay, maybe he's still cranking it. I love him.
And you round that up to 1,000.
He's so great, you guys.
Also really good in Love Actually. All right, so Love Actually, Harry Potter, or Game of Thrones? Which series or movie has the most actors from this?
Gotta be. Oh, wow. I'll bet Love Actually.
Harry Potter wins.
Really?
Yeah, I think Harry Potter. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. He should have been on Harry Potter. He never was. He should have been. That guy. He would have been great.
God, no kidding. I feel like he was, but you're right. He wasn't.
No, he should have
been.
Like
he could have
been
a great
shame.
Minister of.
Of anything.
Minister of magic
or something.
Yeah. No, a minister of magic or ministry of magic.
Yeah, one of the governmental types. He would have been perfect.
Wait, we're talking about Bill Nye?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's not.
Oh, he was in Harry Potter.
No, he wasn't.
Was he?
No,
yeah,
he wasn't.
Yeah, he's Scrimshaw.
No. Yep. No.
Oh, he totally is. Yeah, Scrimgower. Yep. Minister Rufus Scrimgower.
There you go.
Scrimjaw. Yeah.
In Deathly Hallows Part 1.
Oh, wait. That is the minister of magic guy. Isn't it?
I didn't watch the one as much as the two. I'm curious. For some reason,
I thought he should play that role because he did play that role.
I think it's because he did play that role.
And don't let it.
Sure did. No, have you got yet?
I love it. Okay, here's,
I wish I would have predicted this in my supercut.
There you go. Here's a near airplane moment. Here you go.
Janine, I've been transferred. I'm moving away for a while.
Well, I'm not Janine.
Janine, I've been transferred. I'm moving away for a while.
Talking to the guy with the thing, and he thought it was her. It works though. I don't know why, but it's not a problem. It should be dumb. It's not. It's great. He's so good at delivery. All right. Here's Dave.
It's Dave.
Hello there.
I love Dave.
I love that.
Yeah, Dave's great. You know what he's called? I think on the credits, there's a great credit for this. Hold on, I gotta find it. This guy is called. The guy that wasn't Janine, his name in the credits is played by Robert Popper, and his credit is for the character Not Janine.
Not Janine. That is a resume. I played Not Janine in Hot Fuzz.
So good. All right, here's, I don't know what this is.
Out.
Oh, it's that weird kid.
It's a kid.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't like his voice, so I captured it. Here's a great little conversation.
Could you tell the inspector I've arrived, please?
No.
Why? He's not in yet.
And like that guy at the window? He was just, that's all he ever was at the window?
Yeah, and his doppelganger.
That's Bill Bailey.
Yeah, that's Bill Bailey. He's great. I always forget that's him, but yes, that is Bill Bailey.
Can we, I would, seriously, like if we were all stuck in a cabin with a TV, one of the things I would force you to sit and watch with me is every episode of Black Books.
Oh, I don't even know.
I've never even heard of Black Books.
I've heard of it, but I've never seen it. I've never seen it.
It sounds like a 80s Red Shoe Diaries kind of romance, late night Showtime romance. Right.
Black Books.
It's a 2000s comedy, and it's hysterical.
Well, now I'm not interested.
All right.
I hate the 2000s. They're the worst. Here he is.
Couplings.
This is him again when he says this.
Nobody tells me nothing.
He's great. Nobody tells me nothing. I also like this line from Broadbent.
Only had one thing you haven't got.
What's that, sir?
A great big bushy beard.
That's my favorite. That was a payoff later on.
Yeah, it was.
Like a great big old bushy beard.
Man, they had a lot of dead people down there. Mm-hmm. That was crazy. All those kids, all those hoods, they called them.
Right, and the gypsies, traveling gypsies.
Yeah, and the gold guy who does the statue crap for money.
Oh, yeah, the gold still preserved.
Yeah, like, yeah, perfectly preserved.
Even the kid they just arrested in the purple jacket, like, is rotting, but gold mime dude is, like, perfectly preserved in his gold paint.
In position. Again, very, very airplane-esque, but they don't ruin it. I don't know how they don't, right. But they don't. Here's the cop who you couldn't understand.
He's a bullseye.
All right, there's him. Here's, I don't know what this is.
Can you describe it to me?
It's about 2 foot tall, long, slender neck.
Yeah.
Kind of orange and black bill.
Anything else?
Wait, it's a swan.
That's, what's his name?
Many things, including
he co-wrote The Office. Stephen Merchant.
There you go. Yeah, Sweetly.
Yeah, that's a fun little cameo there. From him?
Caliban.
Yeah.
Caliban from Logan, right?
There you go. Yep. Oh, yeah, dude. Oh, I forgot how cool he is in that.
Mm-hmm. He was great. So
I need to watch Logan again. I need to make that a priority.
Boy, yeah, you got to watch it in the black and white.
That's not a movie that you need to rewatch regularly. That
really?
Is hard-hitting, painful movie.
I love Logan. Logan's great, though.
It's good, but yeah, it's...
It's so good.
It's heavy.
Hard. It's hardcore, man. There's boobs in that movie. All right.
Wait, was there boobs in that movie?
Yeah, there was a scene in the early part when he was a driver and the girls in the back of the car flashed their boobs.
Oh, I totally forgot about
that. It's such a throwaway moment. It's not like, right. Oh, yeah, the stuff that happens to Picard in that film. Or, man, what a great introduction to X-23. Oh, yeah, there are boobs in that film.
Yeah, no, I agree.
At 3 minutes and 28 seconds into the film, you see boobs.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I'm just saying... For a Marvel film, that was nuts.
That's true.
You know,
and it was T-shirt
and Ted Deadpool, and then all bets are off after Deadpool.
But. I have a T-shirt with a quote from Logan.
Yeah, what does it say?
It's "Don't be what they've made you."
Oh,
nice.
And I think it's wonderful. It's like this. It's this perfect summation of the whole thing.
Yeah, it's not
but
bad.
Every now and then somebody sees me and they see the quote and they know what it's from and you see them sad and I'm like, oh.
This movie make you sad. Me too.
Me too.
This t-shirt isn't supposed to put a frown on you.
Right.
Take heart. There's boobs. All right. Here's the first yarp.
Yarp.
I can't believe that's the hound. Holy. Yarp. Once you said that, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? It's crazy.
Like so many of them, Rory McCann was at San Diego Comic-Con a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is the thing. When you're in any kind of geek TV show, you have to go to conventions and you make money posing for pictures with people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so a bunch of Game of Thrones people were there. They were all doing the picture thing. And Rory McCann in these pictures, you see a convention goer next to him. He looks like an American redneck.
Yeah, he totally does. Thing. Absolutely. Oh, really? Yep.
He's totally. Got a truck driver beard. He's wearing one of those hats, you know, like a truck driver hat.
Trucker hat, you mean?
Yeah.
Really?
He's got a truck driver beard and hat.
and he's like 6'5" or something.
Yeah, he's more. That's I think right. He's more than that. That guy's enormous.
Does he have overalls and a flannel shirt?
Does he? No.
No.
Does he have a burnt face?
Stalk of wheat sticking out of his mouth.
Right. then he's not fully vested. I'm sorry.
You don't think of this like Scottish actor as American redneck. That's
what do you? Where do you think the American rednecks came from?
I don't know.
You think they were all just
Alabama?
You know, created? Yeah.
Alabama.
Well, they came somewhere before then.
Well, they came from France mainly. Like most of the South is like French.
You
blood.
Think that? You oh, think that wrong?
I know that. That's how they. That's
you know that for a
that's
fact.
Where those ships landed
you know
and dumped out
fact?
A bunch
yeah.
of French. That's where the Cajun, the
yeah,
French
we,
Cajuns
yeah,
came from.
Yeah, we ran. You're talking about that South.
Yeah. Well, what South are you meaning?
South Carolina.
Oh, like up higher. Yeah.
Georgia. Yeah. That's not. Oh yeah, way up there. We're practically Yankees.
Well, I mean Georgia. Well, no, Georgia skirts it a little bit. Just a little bit.
Georgia skirts it a
yeah,
little.
Yeah, well, they're a Delta hub. I'm just kidding. I don't know what that has nothing to do with it. here's a gun fart from one of those detectives. I like that. That's pretty good.
That informed my greeting. That's amazing.
Those detectives are amazing, and they're here. They are again laughing at this
skid marks.
Timing on this is so good. All right, here's your Harry Potter guy.
G'day, I'm Charles Young. I can see the view tomorrow. I'll see Mumbo.
Right.
Oof.
Mumbo.
Best, worst breath probably in the show. In the whole movie. Probably. Yeah. The guy does not have good breath, I'm telling you right now. Here's your He-Man reference.
By the power of Grayskull.
All right, so there's that.
Yeah, they hit that a couple of times.
Oh, I love him so much.
Nick Frost is
so
good.
I wish that they could have made 1,000 movies before they get, you know, old.
Yeah. Well, they're not that old. They could do it still. I mean, Nick Frost is 50 or will be 50 soon. Nick Frost is younger. He's 46 or something. And then,
yeah, I think Simon Pegg's 48.
Yeah, Simon Pegg's almost there. Here's the something about a cuddly monkey.
The cuddly monkey.
Cuddly monkey.
Oh, yeah.
I'm with specifically about a cuddly monkey.
Yeah.
Thanks for the monkey.
Stuff like that. There was a reference to Chunky Monkey.
Mm-hmm. Lots of monkeys.
I don't know what's going on there because it's a Cornetto trilogy and Chunky Monkey is not a Cornetto. I
know. No, it is not.
As well.
No, sir.
Thanks for the monkey.
Thanks for the monkey.
Avengers opt it from the UK.
Maybe. Here's one of the detectives talking about murder.
Murder, murder, murder.
There you go. here's the jog on reference.
Jog on.
That's pretty good.
Okay, maybe that is the spot that informed my greeting.
Might have. There was a few fart sounds, and I think all well done. Also, anytime something would fly in from the other side of the room and hit someone in the head, like a garbage can or something, I would laugh.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I normally don't find that kind of stuff funny, but there was some timing thing going on there that worked. So, well done, movie.
There's a timing thing. I'm always a sucker for a close shot of one person in front of another, and they step off screen, and then they come back on screen.
That is such a classic moment. I love it.
It always makes me chuckle.
It's the best version. Don't name a better one than that. There's not one. When that guy, he slides out all snarky, and the guy slides out behind him, and then the guy in front comes back for a second, then goes back again. It's amazing. It's great. It's a good gift, too.
Yeah.
Here's this.
It's just the one killer, actually.
No luck catching them killers, then.
It's just the one killer, actually.
No luck catching them killers, then.
It's just the one killer, actually.
So, Mario, you got brain freeze?
No, I got brain wave.
Brain freeze is another reference to ice cream.
Yeah.
Such a great technically shot movie, and I was in all the movie except for the continuity on the ice cream cone length.
Oh.
So there was several shots where they were eating the ice cream cones with several scenes where they did this, and they would, you know, do these cuts, and I would notice, "Oh no, the cone is longer. He's already eaten more of the cone."
Mm. Oh, because so, you got you were saying continuity stuff, yeah.
Yeah, avoid cone length.
Yeah,
in your films. That's all I'm saying.
I have those in my freezer upstairs. That exact brand they were eating, and I want to go get them right now. Oh, they sound so good to me. It's a little nuts.
You don't have Cornettos. You have drumsticks.
No,
right?
Drumsticks. Yeah, yeah. Not brand, but same kind of. Yeah, whatever those are called.
Whatever made somebody think that'd be a good name. Drumsticks.
Drumsticks.
Can't wait to go. That's a great name.
It sounds like meat.
Let's make people think this is chicken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or a band implement to play my drums. All right. Here's a deal. This is the NARP.
NARP.
All right. And then this is a great thing I like.
Dog muck thieving kids and crusty jugglers.
Crusty jugglers.
Crusty jugglers.
They all repeat it.
I like that. That's the look on Simon Pegg's face when they repeat that, because they've just been repeating for the greater good.
Right.
No, don't say that.
They all repeat in unison.
Trusty jugglers. All right, and then the funny laugh from I don't remember who. No, it's probably Bill Bailey again. And then this part, which I have to admit, is effective at making you think about what it would be like to be impaled in your chin on a steeple in a small church. So here's this.
Really?
Of course, I just assumed he was dead. So when he started talking, it was like, what?
You know what's great is none of those people died, right? They just all got arrested. It was almost like he got his justice. He didn't kill him.
Right. All the people who were killed were the victims of the criminals, but the criminals themselves, they all end up getting arrested.
Yeah, they got brought to justice. And they had that awesome montage with the kind of punk song behind it of them standing in, for case file photos and just the looking mean and horrible with their, you know, bandages on and their faces all blood. It was just great.
So what was that? I was trying to figure out what that, because they used those kind of shots a couple of times. I was trying to figure out what action film was directly derivative of that shot. And I was trying to remember, do you guys remember if it was just something they did individually?
It
seemed
familiar, like I'd seen that before, but it seemed familiar like it was just a style. But
what was that movie that Brad Pitt was in that he was all...
Legends of the Fall.
No, the English one where he's all...
World War Z. Oh.
Didn't they have like...
Mrs. Smith.
Didn't they have some cuts like that in Snatch? I can't remember.
Thelma and Louise. No.
Yes, Thelma and Louise.
They might have, because it's a Guy Ritchie thing, and Guy Ritchie right. does those quick cuts too.
That's true. Man, I like Snatch a lot. The movie.
Jamie, do you listen to this
the
one,
movie.
Jamie?
The movie. I mean the movie. All right, that's the end of our clips. that was, I really skirted it there. Hey, check this out.
I like Snatch.
It's time for this. The Film Sack checklist goes like this. Nothing wrong with this movie? Check. This movie is great? Check. This movie rules? Check. Pretty simple today. I don't really have any complaints. Star Trek connections, there are some. Simon Pegg, of course.
Black guy dies first? Wait, what black guy?
Yeah, what black guy? There aren't any. Oh, that's true. This is a very white movie, isn't it?
It's it really very, is, very.
Yeah.
If we did Hot video clips.
White. Yeah.
If we did video clips, I would hope that you would have shown the garden fences scene.
Oh.
Because every Cornetto movie has a garden fences shot,
yeah,
and the gag grows from one to another, right? So like in Shaun of the Dead, he goes to jump over a garden fence in front of everybody, and it breaks. And then in this one, Nick Frost just runs through one. he trips and falls and it runs. And then in World's End, Simon Pegg goes to jump over a garden fence, and the entire fence from side to side goes down.
I need to see that. I'm going to watch that movie this next week. I'm going to make it happen. I got to see it because now I'm bugged that I haven't. All right, Star Trek stuff. Simon Pegg is Nicholas Angel. He is in the JJ verse as Scotty. Michelle Wright, executive in charge of production, was also production supervisor on Star Trek Generations. Those are your only two, though. That's it. No more Star Trek people.
But what more do you... I mean, when you get like a major hitter like Simon Pegg in the Star Trek universe and this film, that's a win.
No, it's great. Don't need anything else. The guy's has got cameos in Star Wars. He's got he's got his hand in every geek cookie jar. The fact that he's not in some Marvel thing is shocking to me. Mm-hmm, like, what's going on there? Get that going. All right. What else? Oh, the soundtrack. I'd give it an R for Rad. I thought it was great. Perfectly suited for everything. All good.
Such great Kinks music. Like, they pull a couple of tracks from the Village Green Preservation Society album, including the title track.
Yeah.
And then Goody Two Shoes, you heard at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
Adam Ant. Romeo and Juliet by Dire Straits, my favorite song ever of all time.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. Of all time. Wow.
Of all time.
I apologize all for time. Complaining about that. I felt like that was so shoehorned in there where it's playing in the car as Timothy Dalton's driving by.
It didn't need to be, because at that point you don't know that they're playing in Romeo and Juliet, but it's just this quaint little guitar intro. But
I love Dire Straits. So
yeah.
This is what Edgar Wright does. Like, he sits and puts a lot of effort into getting all the music just right in his movies.
Yeah. Yeah, Baby Driver is probably the one everyone tells me the most about. I need to see that too.
Scott Pilgrim versus the World is his music, you know, love letter.
Mm. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, I don't know. It definitely is, but the music is used so much to such great effect in Baby Driver.
Yeah. I need to see that thing.
It's streaming on, I think, HBO Go.
Oh, well, I have no excuse. I'm going to watch it.
Oh, no, I take that back. It's streaming on the Showtime app. Which
now you have an excuse.
Now I have an excuse. Well, me too.
maybe you can watch it on Amazon Prime.
Oh, well, all right. I'll go look. Hey, the Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up in 280 characters or less. Let's start with Randy Jordan.
Hot Fuzz. Edgar Wright's best film? Yeah, there. I said it. You want to take this up to the chief inspector?
You could. Brian Dunaway.
Brian Dunaway. Hot fuzz. Like dual wielding with no handlebars. Car door. Jog on.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about that lady. She really took a fall. And then finally, Brian Ibbett.
Randy, we almost came to blows. Hot fuzz. The best of the Cornetto trilogy? Yarp. Completely underappreciated for its brilliance? Yarp. The best thing Timothy Dalton ever did? Narp.
Narp. I gotta say, I am a huge fan of his two James Bond films. I know they're bad. I know they haven't aged well. I know I want to watch them with you guys because they are so fun to me.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Timothy Dalton was the closest of between Roger Moore, Sean Connery. I mean, even to some effect, what's his face who did one?
Daniel Craig.
McGillicuddy.
It was there for a second.
I know, yeah.
James Bond, one and done. Who was it? Come on.
Frick.
Anyway.
I know it. I'm letting Scott twist in the wind.
I've already Googled it. I know what it is, too.
George Lazenby.
Great documentary, by the way, on Hulu, if it's still there.
It's sure really? Still there. They made it, right? They're going to host it, the their own documentary.
That's right. Anyway, among all those actors, Timothy Dalton was the closest to the dark, brooding character in the Ian Fleming novels. Not necessarily the one in the later novels, but he's got that kind of like, looks like he's partially thinking about what's going on and also partially hating the world and hating what happened to his life.
Yeah. I want it to be Daniel Craig, but Daniel Craig is a different kind of Bond than the novels.
Yeah. He's the blunt object.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love him.
I like him a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. British guy in a British production is America's Bond. I really want all this Idris Elba talk needs to hurry up and just be a thing because I really think he would be interesting. I don't know if that'll ever happen, but I like the talk of that. My least favorite was probably Pierce Brosnan, not because I don't like Pierce Brosnan, but because it was Pierce Brosnan, and that's all I could think about was I've seen this guy in Mrs. Doubtfire. Remington Steele thing, which was basically James Bond ripoff. Like, it was just hard for me to get around that and not see him.
We was all begging for it at one point in time, I believe. Everybody was great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then they gave us what we wanted, and we was like,
this wasn't as good as we were hoping.
Yeah.
For me, in all of them, the ultimate, most steeped in bondiness, Bond moment in these movies is when he goes back to Skyfall in Skyfall.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I always stop and go, okay, in their prime, these different actors, how would they have played through that sequence?
Yeah.
And Pierce Brosnan doesn't seem like he would have pulled it off.
Yeah.
Like, I could imagine Sean Connery doing it. I could imagine Roger Moore in his prime going back to Skyfall, but not Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, maybe not so much. By the way, I was just checking on Sean Connery here. You got to check on him once in a while.
She's checking on him. Checking his Facebook page.
He's
what's his status today?
87 years old.
Got a little bit of a sore throat. I'm not feeling all that well.
Thank you for asking. 87 years old. He can't find his car keys.
Yeah.
And still retired, obviously, and I don't know where he lives now, but I always worry one day.
He won't write back.
Yeah. scares me that he's going to get announced dead. So.
Again, rest in peace, Sir Roger. He lived to be 89. That's just amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, Roger Moore did just fine.
Yeah. Now, he was my favorite Bond.
He was the Dean Martin Bond.
He hits... He was the first Bond I was introduced to because he was the first Bond that I watched when I was old enough to actually want to watch a Bond movie. So he'll always be my Bond. Just like Rainbow Scarf is the only Doctor Who that I will ever accept.
You'll only accept Rainbow Scarf.
Scarf, my favorite of the Powerpuff Girls.
Yeah, I was gonna say I didn't know you were a Brony over there, Dunaway. You got like
right.
Rainbow Scarf.
No, that's true though. Yeah, Roger Moore was the first one I saw in the theater. The first James Bond I saw playing James Bond in the theater.
Yeah,
and, that is something. That is a that, you know, you never forget your first Bond, I guess, kind of thing.
This is true. Oh my gosh, I found a picture of Sean Connery when he was 18, and he is just a little kid, man. Weird. Mm. Well, anyway.
I really like Idris Elba, but I wish they'd find someone who fits all of the you know, to ticks all the boxes to play James Bond who was younger. Like, people keep coming into this role in their 40s, and then that's going to age them out faster than I want. Yep.
I would really like there to be someone
like Sean Connery who could play bunches of them.
But if you go too young, you get Cody Banks.
Yeah, that's not bad. You get Frankie Muniz, what you saying?
Yeah, it's got to be somewhat older, and he's got to be an older, established,
sophisticated
spy.
Yeah, he's got to be late 30s at the earliest. I don't want someone younger than that. If they're younger than that, it's weird.
I always want him to be Scottish, and like I say, Ewan McGregor would have been amazing if they'd started on with him when he was 30.
Yeah, I could see that.
Have him do that. Have him take that path instead of the Obi-Wan path.
Oh, there's this picture of Sean Connery walking around last year with his wife. He looks fine.
Are you looking back at the sheet of paper that came with his Christmas card that said what he's been working on for the last year?
I just like to see, you know, there he is just kind of strolling around town. He's got a cane now, but, you know, he's all right.
My granddaughter attended her first day of preschool today.
We named the dog. Yeah, I don't know what's going on. I just miss him. I miss him in movies. And the last thing he did was that terrible comic book adaptation that turned out so bad. I don't remember the name of it. What was it called?
We're talking about
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
That was not. That wasn't.
That was terrible. And he retired on it. He was like, "I'm done. This sucks.
I'm out.
I'm not doing this shit. Going back home."
All right.
Lose your dignity.
Did we do? We did, Ebbet. Yeah. I guess got handed this right here. It's an alternate title. Right here in this piece of paper here, it says it was almost called Cold Hair. Now, you have to think about it for a second.
Yeah, got it. No, I got it.
It's the opposite of Hot Fuzz, see?
Sure. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Or Old Man with a Huge Green Coat. That was almost the name.
Yeah.
All right. I have two emails to read today, and I will get through them quickly because we're almost out of time. But here they are. They came to us at filmsack@gmail.com. We'll start with John's, who says, "Dear Scott and crew, this is Paul Scheer. It's time for you to stop not knowing who this is. He was the sketch comedy show Human Giant." Oh, you know who he's talking about. He's talking about Gaptooth guy.
Gaptooth guy with the white stuff on his nose and
He was with the Human Giant, where we got Aziz Ansari from as well. He's been in countless movies and TV shows. He is the disaster artist movie, or in the disaster artist movie that you love. Most importantly, he runs a bad movie podcast just like yours. It's extremely popular. They've covered many of the same films you have on FilmSack.
Which is why I mentioned that podcast multiple times.
Yes, you did say all this. You should listen to a few episodes it's a show you would enjoy. But even if you don't do that, if you would do nothing else, learn who Paul Scheer is. You are no longer allowed to know who Paul Scheer is.
I will learn him. I didn't really know. I wasn't really familiar with him, so I will educate myself.
Yeah, this is from
John. He is one of the most foul-mouthed people on the TV show Veep, which is an achievement in and of itself.
Wait. Which character is he on Veep? I've watched Veep.
He's Stevie. He's a White House, not a White House aide, but he's like
a lobbyist or something.
So yeah, I think so. Right, I think he's a lobbyist.
All right, I just watched a bunch of that. Why do I not remember him? He has the gap tooth still, right?
He totally does.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's a thing you don't.
I finally
when you're known as the gap tooth guy, you don't get rid of it.
I finally saw that.
I mean, Letterman wouldn't get rid of his. Absolutely not.
No. I finally saw
that
scene.
He's got room for a whole extra like Tom Cruise tooth in there, though.
Oh yeah. Well, don't we all?
Yeah, and he's in Fresh Off the Boat. Galaxy Quest TV reboot they're talking about. He's going to be the lead.
I didn't know this is the same guy. I've listened to this podcast.
Weird. Weird.
I'm sure they could still get Tim Allen.
he's redoing his other
idea,
thing.
Though.
He's making
nowadays,
his.
Tim Allen's done.
What's his other thing, though? He's coming.
He's done. He's got a huge standing, hit. He's got a huge hit TV show right now.
Yeah, Last Man Standing is being relaunched. So it got canceled, and they're relaunching it. So he's going to be busy. Plus, they got Toy Story shit to do. I don't know. He's kind of a dick.
Toy Story
let's see.
Shit.
Paul Moran wrote in, says this. Hey, Scott, Brian, Scott, Randy, Brian, and Brian. He messed it up because our order is different usually. Anyway, just wanted to give you a huge thanks for the show. You've been, I have been having cancer treatment over the last year, and it's not been working very well. Your show on the Frog Pants Network have kept me sane and entertained. As a present, I give you the finest example of angry acting by the one and only Pierce Brosnan. Take care, you kids, Paul. Well, Paul, first of all, I hope that's changing for you and that hopefully treatment is effective. Yes. We feel bad about that. Never like to hear when any of our fans are having trouble like that. But thank you for this clip. I'm now going to play it. Here is angry acting from Pierce Brosnan. Here you go.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easy.
He did a lot of that in Dante's Peak as well.
Is that what this is from?
That was good. That was not from Dante's Peak.
This is from, but, what movie is this?
What was that from?
Adam and Joe?
I was not prepared.
No, I wasn't ready for that.
I'm shocked right now because I was so not prepared for that.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. Thank you for that, Paul. I'm going to clip that out and use it for things in perpetuity, and we hope you do better, man. Let us know how that goes, and we're glad the show's there for you. We'll always be here for people like you. All right, that's going to do it for the show, but before we leave, our next film is not a film at all. In fact, next week we have people out of town, so what are we doing? We're doing a Star Trek The Animated Series episode. Watch along, and that we like to do those once in a while, especially when we're out of town. So we're going to cram that in and make that happen for the 18th. So if you're worried there would be no show, oh, there will be.
Worry no more.
Yeah, worry no more. And we'll be back to normal after that one. That's going to do it for us, though. Filmsack.com is the website. You can always send your emails in, just like Paul and John. A couple of apostles here, just realized. It's fantastic.
Wow. Or some Beatles, right?
Or some Beatles, yeah, very well said. Ringo, where my email at, Ringo?
Where's your email?
filmsack@gmail.com is that email address. You can follow us on Twitter @filmsack, and you can find all of us that way as well. Filmsack.com's got everything. It's all linked out, all up our previous episodes, all that stuff. Still no YouTube until I get word on how we deal with studios doing takedowns. I still haven't fixed my strike, so we're working on that. Anyway, that's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy. That's the order.
Murder.
We'll see you next time.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
I kind of like it here.